How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. 8:19 here on a Wednesday morning with JR. Jamie Baker is in for the vacationing Sean Simpson alongside Hammer. Dave Poulin standing by. In Philadelphia, watch the Flyers and the Habs last night. Is it just me, Bakes? Or does David, is David Perron not, like, every time you seem to need a big goal, he always seems to be in the middle of it all. Like, why wouldn't you want that guy on your team? Why did he sit out there in free agency and then end up having to go to, Detroit's an ascending team, but it's going to be a while.
I thought it was interesting because he was a big part of St. Louis. He loved playing there. He was really important in the Stanley Cup run. And, everything I've heard about him, he's truly just a rink rat. You know, he just loves being around the rink. He's there early. He stays late. He just eats, breathes, sleeps, hockey.
And gets it done.
I will say he struggled mightily in those two games against Ottawa. And he was frustrated. He was taking some bad penalties. It was almost like he knew his team couldn't will their way over Ottawa. Like Ottawa just was dominating them both physically and in all aspects of the game. And he got frustrated. I think he knew that and was trying to take it out in any way he could. Mm-hmm. Ended up getting called for it. And he got some kind of penalties that he probably shouldn't have for a veteran guy.
He's a sneaky, dirty guy, though, too.
Oh, right? Yeah, he is. Yeah. Right. You got to be if you're going to play that long in the league, and you're a skilled player.
Speaking of sneaky dirty guys, here's Dave Poulin, our TSN Hockey Insider. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave? And that was a compliment, by the way.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I was once called the dirtiest player in the NHL.
Wow.
Seriously?
Nice.
Yes.
Congratulations.
It was by an esteemed analyst, Jerry Cheevers of the Hartford Whalers. And when I was in Boston and Hartford, Hartford just hated Boston for every reason. And one of them was because we beat them all the time. And we had a couple of really heated playoff series. And I mistakenly, and it was a mistake, broke Ron Francis's nose, but totally accidental. And Jerry Cheevers went on this rant. He was the analyst for the Whalers, went on this rant about how I get to wear this halo because I went to Notre Dame, and it was unbelievable what I got away with because of my reputation and I was a dirty player. It was amazing. And, it was totally accidental, but yes, I do take that as, boy, you played hard. That would be the compliment I would take from you there, JR.
Yes. For sure. Well, exactly.
Hard to play against. Yeah. You were hard to play against.
There you go.
Do you concur?
I'm going to take that.
Yeah. Do you concur with the thought on David Perron?
You know what? I've always liked him as a player. He does play on the edge. He'd be hard to play against. The most impressive thing to me, guys, is he went back to the same organization twice. So he had three different stints in St. Louis, and I don't think you can do that unless you're a really good guy. And people know your ingredients. You might be able to go back someplace like once, but you can't go back twice. You can't have three different stints. And the third one, being a part of a Stanley Cup team. So he's been a part of good teams. I thought it was a good pickup by Stevie Eiserman, more to teach his young guys about being a professional and what it took. But I also think for most of his career, he's not a frontline guy. If you can play him on the third role, he's going to score a big goal for you. Second power play guy, but effectively on a championship team, I think he's a third line guy.
Right. Before you came on, actually, Bakes and I, because he watched I snoozed through your game with no great, had nothing to do with your broadcast. That was a snoozer last night, Philadelphia. And we'll get to that in just a second. But he was watching Nashville and Boston, and he said that was a pretty snoozy game as well. And I asked him, so I'll ask you, if the Boston Bruins fall short of their goal, and listen, to win the Stanley Cup, you got to have everything going for you, but to even make the final, that's still a great accomplishment. If they fall short of their goal, you had to pick out one thing about Boston that you think you go, well, they didn't end up with this. What do you think it is, if there is one so-called weakness they might have?
I've seen them a couple of times live recently, and I'm not sure I have one thing there. I'm really not.
Right.
I'm really not. Like, they're relentless. I think they're going to get Taylor Hall back here, and they may have a hard time fitting him in, but I think they're going to get him back here. And so what's that going to do to them up front? I don't see a weakness. They're team tough enough. They don't have that guy, but they're team tough enough for sure. And they play a unique team toughness game where some of the guys are like, well, what are you even doing? But they're team tough. And, you know, adding Hathaway, who's annoying, adding Bertuzzi, who's a pest, adding Orlov, who plays really hard. So I just don't see it, even to the fact that they have two goalies. And believe me, both guys think they can win. And both guys believe they're number one guys, and that's rare. So I don't think there's a weakness with that team. I really don't. I don't say that very often. I don't say it lightly either. I just don't think there's a weakness.
That's kind of what I said too, my answer. I thought maybe if you can shut down their top guys in a seven-game series and rely on depth scoring or maybe special teams, their power play is struggling a little now, but they're going to be a tough out in a best-of-seven series.
Plug Taylor Hall back in there. Like, you know, now you're plugging a Hart winner back in there. And saying, okay, well, we might have had a little bit of an issue with depth scoring, but we just plugged Taylor Hall back in. So, you know, and maybe Nick Foligno becomes available, too, for some depth scoring. But they're going to be sitting guys out that other teams would want to play in the playoffs.
Speaking of those two guys, because they're both back now skating, talking about Nick Foligno and Taylor Hall with the Bruins, we're still now just a little less than 3 weeks away from the playoffs. So presumably they're on the road to being able to play and actually would be able to play even before the end of the season. But due to the salary cap, they can't be brought off the long-term injured list. It's kind of like the Kucherov situation was a few years ago with Tampa that certainly the Lightning took a lot of criticism for. We may see it playing out again this year in Boston. Would you like to see the NHL, and I don't know how you do it, be able to close that loophole a little bit, and whether it's, I don't know what the solution is, Dave, if it's an independent doctor that comes in and says, Taylor Hall is good enough to play, therefore he has to play, and you got to find a way to make the salary cap. Like, is there a solution, or is that just the bending of the rules and we're going to have to accept it?
I don't believe there's a solution from a medical assessment standpoint. I just don't. You know, what if an independent doctor were to come in and say, you're healthy, you can play, and you were to go out in the first game and freakishly have a recurring injury? I mean, you can't force a player to play. And I think very often, you know, these guys, it's a fine, fine line. And they have taken the rules, and you talk about stretching them. They're stretched in every direction possible. And they're masters at it, guys. And, you know, Vegas is does it. And the best teams all do it. And, you know, in Toronto, Brandon Pridham wrote the rules. He knows them better than anybody. He knows you can stretch them to these various degrees. And the longer that you put smart people around this issue, the more they're going to stretch them. They just do. And I mean, you know, I won't go here with you, but the tax code is pretty ridiculous, guys. If you talk about what you can and can't, you know, and maybe even more so with the IRS and the CRA, but you know, the different directions that, you know, that you take things in are, it's just the way it is. If you give smart people a challenge and it's a hard cap, but it's really not, you know, the NBA found a million different ways around it. They just call them exceptions. The NHL doesn't have exceptions. They just make them.
You know, we talked about the Bruins on the other end of the spectrum, and you were there last night calling Philly. Like, where is Philly right now, and where do you see that organization going?
It's different in the last month, Jamie. And it now that sounds funny, but we were in a month ago, and Montreal manhandled them on a Friday night, and the crowd was so apathetic. And it was a Friday night, and the building, you know, just did not have a good crowd. And so what happened in the last month? Well, they made a change in the management position. They brought Danny Briere in on an interim basis, which we actually had last night. Brian Mudrick did a good job interviewing him between periods. They've made a change at the top with their CEO of Comcast Spectacor. So not to get too complicated, but that's the sports division of Comcast, which is the parent media owner. And it's a local guy, a very, very well-regarded businessman. His name is Dan Hilferty. And I think this is a really key move. And I talked to a couple of different people in the business world yesterday here in Philly that said, man, they are so lucky to get this guy. Like, he's a Philly guy. And you think about, you know, in Ottawa, a guy who's connected in every direction, a big personality, highly successful as a business guy. He ran Blue Cross. I think he was the CEO of Blue Cross at one point. And just a perfect guy to lead an organization. that to me is the most significant change. And they had a former Comcast executive named Dave Scott, who was in the seat, but not necessarily a hockey guy, whereas this guy is a hockey guy. I sensed a significant uptick last night in the mood of the building, and I still know a lot of people there. It amazes me. I haven't played here since 1990, and I still know a lot of people. And it's a different building, by the way. And still a lot of the people inside are the same. And in talking to people, and maybe even more so in talking to people in the community, they're highly encouraged. So I think it's going in a good direction now. They'll make a decision, and by all indications, Danny Briere is going to get a chance to be the GM. They're going to bring a president of hockey ops in. I believe they're going to restructure a little bit. But I think this person, the CEO of Comcast Spectacor, Dan Hilferty, is going to be a key ingredient.
Hmm. It's interesting because I think we as hockey fans, in terms of whatever your favorite team is, we fixate on, in terms of not just the players, but the caliber of the coach and the caliber of the general manager, everybody that's involved in the hockey side of things. Within a hockey organization, why do you believe it's important that, you know, you mentioned the resume of this new executive they brought in. Why is that important when I, as a hockey fan, say, well, as long as my GM is good and my coach is good, I should have a good chance?
And the communication within the organization, JR, and I don't think it was there. And on one of my trips in, I did meet with all the senior executives, and there was an imbalance between the business side and the hockey side, and the communication wasn't as effective as it has to be a successful organization and to get the resources that you need as a hockey team to be successful as an organization. So I think it is very important, and perception had been beaten up. And the worst word possibly in sports is apathy. And you know, these are passionate fans, and if they don't have that passion, and already, as I said, inside of a month, it appears to be an uptick with that.
You talk about success on the ice. One of the things the Senators have done, they've improved their defense lately. Obviously, Sanderson's been great this year, bringing in Chychrun, but now Tyler Cleven. We may find out today, first of all, if Thomas Chabot is hurt or not. That might be a factor, but whether Cleven is going to be in the lineup tomorrow night. Now, you coached NCAA for 10 years. He comes out of the NCAA. If you were his coach, if you were Brad Berry and he was talking to him the day before a game, what advice would you give a Tyler Cleven in preparation for his first NHL game?
I would say keep it simple, look for your partner, and do exactly what you've done at the college level. Just be ready to do it a little bit quicker. And I think that, you know, he's an ingredient. It's going to take him some time, but we've watched players come in from the NCAA level, and Jake Sanderson being one. Now, Cleven had one extra year and probably wasn't, you know, he doesn't have the skill level of Jake Sanderson for sure, but he does what he does very well, and he's steady. He knows his game. And I would say just do what you do. And you know what? And is any good defense partner? I mean, I don't know who he'll be paired with. That'll be interesting to see. But you know, when I had a young defenseman to talk to, I said, look for your partner. Every single time, you look for your partner, and you can bail you out of a lot of things. But it's going to be interesting to see him and to see him come in, because he's a different ingredient. And the physical side of him, he can't shy away from that. And he'll find out pretty quickly how strong, you know, the average guy is in the NHL. But he'll have to play that physical game. And I see it more as a cycle stopper. You know, not the big open ice hit, not the true bet center ice, but more the cycle stopper, the pin on the cycle and the front of the net. I really think that will be a key aspect for him, because guys are not only bigger in the NHL, but they're so nifty at the way they free up their sticks in front of the net and their body positioning and everything. And that's something that has impressed me, and I would attribute it to college coaching. So the fact that he's played at the same program as Sanderson, because Sanderson's stick innately is very good, but this kid has been coached along the way, guys. Like he made a couple of plays in that game in his third period. One of them was on the strong side boards. And I'm not going to get too detailed here, but for the radio listeners, but it was a strong side board play. And Barkov, who's a big guy, was going up the boards. And not only did Sanderson pursue, but he took away the back route. So Barkov, which he loves to do, couldn't turn back along the boards. And it was a subtle little play. And it was about halfway through the third period, and I thought, man, oh man, that is such a veteran play for a first-year player, to be able to take a guy like Barkov and control where he's going along the half boards, because that's what Barkov's strength is, so good along the boards. And the other one was a stick play where he came across to help his partner. Those two things just jumped out at me. And so those details of the game, I would assume, have been taught and taught by Brad Berry and the college, you know, guys at North Dakota. So I'm assuming Clevin has some of those same details to his game.
One of the things I think that's most enticing, not only the fan base, but to the organization and DJ Smith about Tyler Clevin, is he brings, and Pierre Dorion said this last week when they signed him, he brings a unique skill set, something they don't have within their defensemen within the organization, both those playing and those prospects. Again, you having coached 10 years NCAA, you can play a big, robust game in college. As you said, the NHL is a different game. Is it necessarily translate? Like, you know, Simmer uses the term, you take the cage off, it becomes a different game. Is it, 100% that he's going to be able to play that way in the NHL like he played in college?
We'll have to wait and see on that, guys. And you know what? I coached against a guy, and that same question was asked me. He was a fifth-round draft pick. And we used to say, we loved this kid when he played in college. And we were like, is it going to translate? Now, this, don't forget, is, you know, in the early 2000s, and there was more physical play involved on that fisticuff level in the NHL. And when he got to the NHL, guys, he was even better. And his name was Kevin Bieksa. And we watched Bieksa play college and said, well, yeah, he's getting away with that because he's got a cage on. And it turns out he was even tougher when he took the cage off. And so we don't know that. I don't know that about Clevin as a person at all. And I didn't know the person of Kevin Bieksa at that point. So it's not unprecedented that there have been guys, and Jacob Trouba is a college player as well, and it's translated pretty well for him. So, in the day and age of today's game, you do have to back up physical play in a big hit, but, you know, I'm assuming he's a big kid too, and so yep. I'm assuming that we'll figure that out.
Okay. As mentioned, you did the game, you know, and again, you guys did the best job you could to try to make it interesting last night, but it was a snoozer. At one point, when they played 10 straight minutes with no whistles in the third period, I think you guys were both saying, well, who spent the dinner reservations to get this game over with? But I did want to ask you about a couple of Montreal players. Sean Farrell played his first game that they just signed out of Harvard. And also a thought on Gurianov, who's now played, I don't know how many games he's played, around 10 or so with Montreal. It's kind of like it's a free look-see, I guess, on that player. So maybe some thoughts on Farrell's debut and on what you've seen of Gurianov last night and in his short time in Montreal.
Farrell may have very well had it in the deal that he was going to play a game, guys, and was going to burn a year off the contract. And it may have been last night's game that he had, you know, that they had agreed to play. He's incredibly skilled. Now, I did the Olympics as well, so I watched him there. I'd watched him up through the program, U18s, and he was in the World Championships as well. So he's had some unique experiences because of the pandemic. And while his development has been on a different curve, he's also had some unique experiences. Like, that kid never gets to play in the Olympics at that age, you know, if NHL players are available. Really skilled, no question about him. They played him on the wing last night. You can see that he uses his feet to keep his body out of trouble. And I say that. He had one defensive play where he simply skated to a place where he was in a good position. He didn't do anything physically, but he put his body in a good position because his feet are so good. And you can see his hands are good. He's really small. And I say that he's small. And, you know, he's been successful in the USHL. He's been successful at the college level. And you just have to prove yourself that much more when you're of that stature. And guys do. And there's certainly a place in the game for the smaller player. But his skill set is excellent. I think he does pretty well. I don't know if that's a one-off for him playing or not. That's not determined. And they're pretty banged up right now, so it wouldn't surprise me to see him play a couple more games. Gurianov, that is a free look. And, you know, and Dadonov, that's worked for both teams, guys. So Gurianov wasn't working. He had the one big year, the bubble that year. He was excellent in Dallas, and he was excellent in the playoffs in the bubble. But he hasn't quite done it. High pedigree and a first-round pick. I don't know where you go with him. You know, you'd have to qualify him, and I'm not sure exactly where he fits in the organization. I've seen glimpses of it. It's ebbed a little bit now. It started off really well for him. He's a big guy. You can see he's got good hands, but that may come down to a price point. And with Montreal's, you know, the group they've got coming back, it's just whether, you know, he's willing to come back at a price point that fits their budget.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me a little bit and of Julian Gauthier here in Ottawa, right? Where you look at the package and you go, that should be really good. And then it just all the pieces don't fit. And you don't really end up seeing much at the end of the day. Just a quick thought as we wrap up on Winnipeg. which got 41 shots last night but couldn't beat James Reimer, and they end up getting shut out by the Sharks, and the Flames and the Predators both won. So it's a turtle race, but it's a race, and now Calgary's within two. And Rick Bowness, we played his comments from after the game. I don't know if you got a chance to hear them or not, but he, again, in a roundabout way, was you know, critical of some of his better players, without naming them, of we need more from these guys. And this is not the first time that he's been saying this, and he's benched a couple of stars. Is it reached a point now with Rick Bowness where, you know, he doesn't have any more cards to play in terms of what he can either say or what he can do as a coach to get his best players to put her down to the metal here in these last 2 weeks of the season?
It isn't for lack of using what he's had. He's used what he's had, and I think it magnifies, guys, how good a job that coaching staff did through mid-January. And because they came in and they took over a situation that was acknowledged was tough in both the locker room and on the ice, and what they got out of that group, and they were in first place in the Western Conference in mid-January. And I think it speaks more to that. And now there's been, you know, a little bit of a kickback to where they were in the past. But if I'm him, I'm looking at that group and saying, look, all I want is what I saw up through January 15th. I'm not asking you to do anything you haven't done and that you haven't done this year, but you're not doing it right now. And when star players get criticized, it always amused me. And I wasn't a star player. But when they're criticized, what you have to tell them is, we only want what we've seen. Like, you're the one who set the bar. You're the one who showed us how good you are. You're the one who, you know, went on a ridiculous scoring streak and scored, you know, in eight straight games or whatever you did, and played at the top of your game. And so for us to ask that of you, that's our job. So all we're doing is we're asking you to be what you are and what you've been and what you've been for us this year. And so I'm always intrigued when players would take offense at being asked to do what they've done again.
Right.
And they're fully capable. And it's up to them now.
Yeah.
I mean, if they do limp into the playoffs, I mean, you know, what does that do? They want to go in on a roll. They haven't been good as of late. I think they're a capable team. They still have the goaltender that can win it all. But they're back almost in the disarray they were when Rick Bowness took over. And as I said, I'm even more impressed with what he did for the first 5 months he was there.
All right. Good stuff. As always, appreciate the time and the insight, and look forward to chatting with you again on Friday.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
SN 1200 presents Bet and Breakfast, powered by FanDuel. Make every moment more on FanDuel, North America's number one sportsbook.
Hammer, do you want to review yesterday's picks? For the first time, I did the FanDuel picks.
I don't, but I will. You had Canada and Honduras.
Yes.
You picked Canada.
To win. Thank you. I picked... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what was there the spread? What was after
you,
that?
You could bet a bunch of different options for total goals in the game.
Yes.
And again, people who hate soccer go, well, did you pick 0-0? Games are always 0-0. No. Your old friend JR, with some theory behind it, picked the over of 2.5. Over 2.5 total goals.
That's right, and I think I criticized you for that.
Thank you. Make the final. 4-1. Thank you.
And, of course, you had Ottawa's own
Jonathan David to score a goal. We have the highlight of Jonathan David scoring a goal. Maybe we could just to kind of put the cherry on top of the segment of me going 3 for 3, we could hear that.
To Johnston. Little 1-2, good interplay. Buchanan has multiple options. Laren! Off to the foot of David! Guess who? Johnny on the spot once again.
You didn't have to tell me, guess who? I told you Jonathan David was going to score a goal last night. So, Canada wins, check. Over 2.5, check. Jonathan David scores, check. Thank you very much. Hi, Jamie. How you doing?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You made everybody a little bit of money.
You went 2 for 3 on Monday when you did it,
yep.
Which normally you get brought back if you are 50% or more.
But I wasn't here yesterday.
But you weren't, so you lost your place.
Yep.
I offered you the option because, you know, it's the last day you're in this week of stepping up to the bar again, and you said, no, it's okay, you keep going. Shooter, you're hot. I got the
You were hot. You won. You went 3 for 3.
I got the hot dice right now.
I can't try and try and beat that. No.
Okay, Leafs and Panthers tonight in Toronto.
Yep.
I'm going Toronto on the money line, -156. I'm going, this game is a 7.5 over-under like the game against Ottawa was. I guess they just expect Florida to score a pile of goals.
And give up a pile of goals.
Yeah, and you had predicted the over, and it came in at 7. I'm actually predicting an under on this, so I'm going with the under of 7.5. Leafs on the money line to win the game. So that two-way parlay pays $15.30 on my $10 bet. Nice little return on that. And I'm going a little bit off the board because you criticized me yesterday for you know picking the you know all the easy things, which I didn't.
Big time.
Picking someone to score a goal in a soccer game is not that easy.
How many people score in a soccer game?
Sometimes none.
Well, it's true.
Thank you.
But selectively on the squad, on the pitch, there might be 3 or 4.
So I could have gone with a Matthews, a Marner, a Matthew Tkachuk to score a goal in tonight's game. I'm going off the board, and I'm telling you whose name is jumping out at me right now is Michael Bunting. Michael Bunting to score a goal tonight at +280 if he gets a goal tonight. There you go. Okay. Find out tomorrow if it all comes true. Make every moment more on FanDuel, North America's number one sportsbook. And if it doesn't, don't blame me. Because, listen, I can't be perfect.
Nope. Take no blame.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
You're into the third hour of your second morning show.
Yep. Doing fine.
Today, at 10, you go to your regular job, and then you don't have a pre- and post-game show to go to after.
That's right.
Are you already looking at that? What time do you normally finish your workday?
5:30.
When you're in the office.
Yeah.
Wow. They work you hard over there, huh?
It's good.
5:30. What's the name of your workplace?
Web Marketers.
Yeah.
Digital marketing company here.
No, they're not listening right now? The bosses? Probably not.
I don't know. Doubt it.
Like good people?
Great people.
Are they?
Wonderful. So the CEO, Kyle Schmendrick, he played basketball at Carleton, won 4 championships there, has an aerospace engineering degree.
Who hasn't won 4 championships at
Carleton? Yeah, exactly. So there's actually a couple other guys that played basketball there, and there's one of the guys played in the Quebec Junior League hockey, so they have some ex-athletes, and then they've got their tech guys and marketing creative people. They've got an own production studio, but Kyle's father-in-law is Brad Shaw, assistant coach with the Philadelphia Flyers, who'll be in town. So
that's the
connection. That's how I met them. Brad Shaw has a cottage on the same lake as my sister, where my sister's where they live actually year round. So I met the CEO of Web Marketers through Brad, and
the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, great company, great people. Yep, take care of us, and they want you to work hard, but it's fun. It's good work. Account manager there,
even though they keep you to 5:30.
It's just the hard part is like as for my age, there's employees that are in their 20s and they've just grown up on computers and I'm like a snail compared. They're zipping around 100 miles an hour doing this. And I'm like, just it's envy. There's envy. I deal with envy on a regular basis, but it is what it is.
Do they, you know, when they're looking at you over there struggling and you're doing the two finger.
No,
type.
I can type fast. That's one thing I can do. Okay. I took typing in high school.
Do you go, what do they call that again? Home base or whatever it is when you put your 4 fingers from each hand?
Yeah, I do that.
You do that?
Yeah.
I'm two finger Johnny. Now, okay. I've been doing it for so long, I'm pretty quick with the 2 fingers.
I took typing in high school for one reason and one reason only.
Good marks.
Nope. No homework.
What?
No homework.
Oh, no homework, yeah.
Yep. Didn't have a typewriter home. Like, it was an in-class.
Yes.
Had no homework to it.
Did you have a Smith Corona? That was the only typewriter that ever
I don't even
had.
Know the name of it.
See, here's the problem with the two-finger Johnny is you always have to have your eyes on the keyboard.
Yeah.
For Bakes and I that took typing in high school, we're up there. We're looking at the monitor. We're having
I took typing in high school, too. And unlike Jamie Baker, I don't lie about why I took it. I took it so I could get a high mark just as well as taking Latin in high school as well, because everybody told me, hey, you can do very little work and score in the 90s, which I did. Thank you.
Well, I still wanted to get a good grade, but I also wanted to get a good grade while minimizing the amount of homework in one of my classes.
Okay. Smart. Fair enough.
Just saying.
So anyway, when they're looking at you still, even though your fingers are on home base, struggling with the concepts of everything computer oriented,
it's
your younger coworkers.
It's if there's a computer issue or if there's something, let's say a client calls me and they have issues with their website or something.
Yeah.
I'm not the guy to fix it. I have to go ask for help. Where I'd like to be a little more proficient in helping.
Okay.
All right.
That's me for JR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all. Well, that's why
I'm not too proud not to ask for help.
That's why we're a team. It's a whole team of people.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Good
but they
people.
Don't snicker because sort of, hey, oh, well, look
at old Van Baker snickering over there again.
Not to my face. Not to my face.
But in the lunchroom.
Well, okay. We don't know. Yeah.
Can you believe he had to ask me
yes.
about that?
I'm sure that's come up. Yeah. I'm okay with it.
He doesn't even know what Control-Alt-Delete does. I laugh because it's the same thing for me. Anyway, okay, 8:55, so we got a bunch of guys. I wanted to ask you quickly about this, which is apropos of nothing, and I've not warned you I'm going to ask you about this, but it's not hard. NFL owners yesterday approved allowing players to wear the number 0 on their jerseys, which used to be a thing until the 70s and then was not a thing any longer. I think, well, they basically told players they couldn't wear 0 anymore. Now they said, you know what, you can wear 0 again. Would you like to see... And it must be outlawed in the NHL because there was a point where a couple players wore 0 or even double 0, but it's not a thing anymore. Would you like to see NHL players have 0s?
No.
Yeah. Too hot doggy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just because I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
I guess is probably why. So, I mean, I would have, if somebody did it, I'm like, whatever. But I think my preference would be, no, I'd keep it the way it is.
What about... Because things have certainly changed from when you played, when predominantly most players wore low numbers as you grew up in minor hockey, right? You got the old, there's the team jerseys, you know, 2 through 18, and yep. Then the goalie's got 1 and 30. And now there's a lot of high numbers out there. Every team has 90s, 80s, 50s, whatever. Do you like it?
Yeah,
now?
I think 99 changed that. Like,
yes.
I don't want... Anything in the hundreds, I think that'd be a little weird, and I don't know if it could fit on the jerseys, but 99 changed that. So anything from 1 to 99 works. Like, my first number in Quebec was 53, which is like a middle linebacker number. I didn't like that number.
Was that your training camp number?
That was my training camp number. You knew you weren't high on the depth chart when you get number 53.
Now, did they offer you the option when they say, hey, kid, we're calling you up to the show of a different number, or was that, here's your jersey?
At first, they didn't, and then... When I ended up staying there, they offered me to, if I wanted a different number, I took 28.
28?
It was available. I have no reason why.
What'd you wear at school?
At college?
Yeah.
16, my freshman year, because 9 was taken, then I wore 9. 9 was my favorite number growing up.
So in Quebec, I'm going 16, Michel Goulet.
Yep.
Right? 9.
He was the left winger, my first game.
How's it going?
And Joe Sakic is center, and I'm a left-handed centerman. Talk about the anchor. I was so nervous for that game. I'm like, you're putting me in a position where I'm like, I'm just not as good as these guys. Like, it made me more nervous by having me play with those guys than being on the third or fourth line.
So perennial 50-goal guy, Michel Goulet.
Yeah, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer. Who's Waldo? Where's Waldo? Who's this guy?
Did Joe Sakic offer you any advice?
I can't remember.
No.
I don't know. I have no clue. It was...
Pucks in deep.
So I do have a story from the first game. I've told it on the pregame show before, but you probably haven't heard it, but...
I listen all the time, but go ahead.
So I get called up, and I find out the night before in Toronto, we'd played a game in Rochester. I was with the Halifax Citadels. And then we bussed to Mississauga. We were going to play Mississauga. That was the next day. And at like 2 or 3 in the morning, I get a phone call in my room on the hotel phone, because there's no cell phones back then. It's Robbie Fatorik, the head coach. He goes, come on down to my room. And I'm like, I didn't think I played that bad last night. Like, what's going on?
Can this wait till the morning?
Yeah. So he goes, you're getting called up. The game was at 2 o'clock. So you have like, I don't know, a 9 a.m. flight to Quebec City. So off I went. I get picked up right at the airport around 11:30. They take me right to the rink. I get to the rink right around noon. So like 2 hours before the game and everything. Go out, play the game. Now the team had been struggling. They hadn't been winning much. So I ended up getting sent down. But prior to getting sent down, after my first game, Guy Lapointe, one of the assistant coaches, got fired. So he's coming around kind of saying goodbye to everybody, but yet I'd never met him. So he comes up to me and we had this weird interaction where I'm like shaking a man's hand who just got let go of his duties.
He's wondering who you are.
And he's like, who's this guy? And I've never met him. It's like, by the way, I'm that guy that just played right wing with Sakic and Goulet, and good luck. Good luck to your future. Good luck in your future endeavors, Mr. LaPointe.
We wish him all the best.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. So that was my first game. Then they sent me down. They didn't want me involved in that. I mean, I would have liked to stay. Obviously, you want to stay there.
Yeah.
But they wanted me getting more ice time down at Halifax and more of a winning culture. So off I went. But I did get that first game in that 1 year.
I would imagine playing at Le Colisée. Now, the team was just kind of rounding into form, and unfortunately didn't stay there. That had to be a pretty cool place to stay. Like the fan, when it got into the playoffs those years. Against Montreal in the early and the mid-80s. Like, it felt like it was just through my television off the charts. So to play in that environment, what was that like?
Well, they weren't in the playoff race. They didn't make the playoffs when I was there. But, it was definitely a cool rink to play in. Anytime, like, some cool experiences over the years, but Montreal versus Quebec on a Saturday night, didn't matter whether it was at the Colisée or at the Forum. That was a fun game to play.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Montreal was a much better team, just because of the rivalry, the emotional impact of the game, they were usually hard-fought close games.
Yeah.
You know, like we would elevate our play.
Like the Leafs and the Sens.
Yeah, Leafs, right? And Sens. Montreal-Toronto was like that when I played in Toronto, same type of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, by the way, Mike Johnson, who was on yesterday when you weren't here.
Okay.
I didn't know this, but he said, yeah, I played with Jamie Baker.
Yeah.
Did you hear the little interaction we had yesterday?
No, I didn't.
You weren't listening. Eh? It's 5% of the time you don't listen.
I was working.
Anyway, he was... He was complimentary of you. He said
on the air. He probably felt pressure. Did you pressure him?
No, I felt it was genuine.
Okay.
Felt it was genuine. And he actually said, he didn't spend a lot of time together, brief time in Toronto. But he says, here's what I remember about Jamie Baker. He was a really nice guy.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah.
And it didn't sound forced, or it didn't sound like he needed to say that publicly for public consumption.
Well, he's not gonna say I'm a goofball probably on the air either, but he came up.
Yeah,
from Bowling Green.
Signed out of college.
Yeah, he signed right out of college. He was a really good guy.
Yeah, because I was relating a Tyler Cleven question to him signing right out of college and then jumping on the ice. And he said, well, actually in my first game, Jamie Baker. So that's how it came up.
Yeah, and so we had, as an ex-college player myself, you try and help a young guy that's coming in as a college player. So absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you want him to succeed too. So unless he's a centerman who's going to try and take my job. But...
Okay, one final question on Quebec, because I did want to ask you about this. So I always thought, I don't know how other people feel about it, I always thought the color, the logo, just the overall Quebec Nordiques jersey, still to this day, one of the best ever.
Yeah.
You feel that way?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you keep your original? You got any original jerseys? Or you got any keepsakes?
So I do. The only jersey I don't have... some guy in San Jose has it, is the Halifax jersey. So I had a jersey from all my teams, and a few years ago, like, I had stuff in storage, I had memorabilia, and I'm like, I'm just carting it around, moving it, so I'm
not looking at it.
Yeah, not looking at it. So I gave some to my daughters, my dad, my sister, but I got my game jerseys all framed. I think,
nice.
Like, I had two Leaf jerseys. One of them was, like, a replica 1938 jersey or something. It was mm-hmm. pretty cool. I gave my daughters, my two daughters had first choice, and the one that plays hockey, who played hockey at
Vermont.
In Vermont, not, yep. So Bridget, she picked the Nordiques one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so I got it framed. There's a photo, and then there's a little gold, like, you know. I have a little comment to her and
nice.
Stuff like that. Yeah, so it was cool. My other daughter took the Sharks. She's not a hockey fan. She's like, I don't know, San Jose?
Cool logo.
Yeah. My dad got the next one. So that was the Senators. That's his love. So he, as you know, he recently passed away a few months ago, unfortunately. So I now have that. I have that. It was.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So I took that from him. And then my ex-wife, but the mom of my kids, I gave her one. From when we won, which one did I give her? I think I gave her the Finland one, and it kind of represented the whole journey. I said, these are, like, this was my last pro jersey.
Yep.
I kept the Chicago Wolves for myself, which was in the International League. We won a championship, so I kept that one.
Yep.
And my sister got the Toronto Maple Leafs one.
Nice.
So, yeah, so pass it around. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just
but of all of them, I love the Nordiques. It's one of my favorite logos of all time.
If it wasn't, that was your first one. That was your first team.
That was my
first
team.
It wasn't your first team. Let's say it was one of your, you know, because you played for, obviously, you know, as you said, there are five or six different teams. If it wasn't the first, is it, do you love it because it's the, because it was the first one? Or do you love it because it's, you love it because you love it?
I would say both, but I love it. If I hadn't have played there, I love it because I love it.
Yeah.
I love that logo.
Yeah.
You?
Oh, same. Like I said, like I actually have, and I was not necessarily, I hated Montreal as a kid because they won all the time. So I would always cheer for the Nordiques because they were always the underdog against Montreal. And so the one year they beat them in game seven in overtime at the, I think that was at the Forum, right? Peter Stastny scored. Anyway, I actually have a Quebec Nordiques hat just because I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's a great conversation piece.
Yeah, it's like it, yeah, just the logo is very, very neat. It's like they, I think the other one that's the franchise is no longer around anymore that is really, really nice in its color and its style and its is the Minnesota North Stars.
Yep.
I love that logo.
Yeah, that's good. I like classic. Hartford, too. If you're ever having a like a downer day or feeling a little lonely, put your Nordiques hat on and just go to a local establishment. Somebody will probably talk you up about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Anything you want to chat about is always welcome. You can text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll take a break, top of the hour news and sports update. And then when we return, hour four, we'll have a code word for you in our Great Sens jersey giveaway. So stand by for that. Don't forget, Sens, after a day off yesterday, are back on the practice ice at 10:30. This morning as they get set to take on the Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow and right here on TSN 1200.